If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
It's 2 minutes past seven and it's time for Pivot Point. I'm super excited for my next interview, which is a conversation that's bringing us all the way from BRICS back right home where economic focus really does count. Yoko is a name that we are currently very, very familiar with, but a decade ago or so, it was probably unknown. Very smart for them to come and break into what we had until that point known as the cash point market with a bright blue till point or payment point, which is how they broke into the market. And after that, and since then rather, has become possibly the most exciting and one of the fastest growing fintech companies in the country. My next guest joining me for Pivot Point is one of the founders and the CEO of Yoko, Katlego Mapai. And I just want to thank you for making the time to speak to me before we close out my stand-in stint here. How are you, Katlego?
How are you?
Fantastic. Very excited to be speaking to you. While most South Africans, I think, are very familiar with the Bright Blue Machine, I have to say that the opportunity that I got to attend Yoko Next's launch at the end of last month was thoroughly enlightening to me, and one of the other reasons that I wanted to talk to you, because of the extent of influence or impact the Yoko business has on across businesses. Won't you take us through the evolution of Yoko over its lifetime and take us a little bit behind the scenes as to how we got to where we are?
Thank you, Rafida, and evening to your listeners. Very happy to be here. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, we founded this company in 2013, officially launched it at the end of 2015. It took quite a while to get going. We had to get a license to operate, build up the whole operation, funding, you know, the whole shebang. But, you know, that night we launched in 2015 was very special. I think about it a lot because about 500 businesses that were in a beta program with us that year, very quietly. And we announced ourselves to the world and never really turned back. But it was funny, even on that night and the day afterwards, we still hadn't figured out how to grow. It wasn't simple. And, you know, the beginning of the next year, like, you know, we didn't have a lot of runway, right? We really needed to figure out how to grow. But I think what really spurred us on was this commitment to reaching business owners, small business owners who previously did not accept card payments. So that was the number one KPI in the company, was whether somebody was new to card. And we just started experimenting with, you know, digital marketing, e-commerce, and, you know, with this underlying belief that you didn't need somebody to come see you for you to set up the machine and get onboarded. Mm. And that's really, once we got that growth loop going, that's really what allowed us to scale and to reach all corners of the country. Because our view was we wanted to make getting a card machine as simple as getting a mobile phone. We saw the technologies was actually very similar.
Right.
But in the one case, you know, you kind of, you go to your mobile phone shop, you get your phone, your SIM card, you can make phone calls on the same day. But with the card machine, you had to call, you know, your institution and make appointments and all this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And sign contracts. It was just this whole story. And we just wanted to make it as simple as that. And honestly, that's what we did. So very proud of that. And I guess as I think about the evolution, you know, as we scaled, we were a little startup at the time, but as we scaled, we had to really make the decision to go a lot deeper into the technology stack. So, you know, people see this little blue card machine on the countertop, but really there's an iceberg below that with, you know, how we process the payments, how we manage risk, how we service our customers. There's a lot of technology, and there's something I'm really proud of, that we've managed to build a lot, and we're a true technology company that's managed to, you know, reach and serve its customers in an innovative and a cost-effective way. And then we also launched Yoko Capital in 2018. So that was an important product where, you know, if you can imagine, we gave a lot of business owners their first card machine. A lot of business owners started using software with us for the first time to manage their business. And then through Yoko Capital, they were able to get an advance on their trade, which became such a critical asset. In terms of being able to, you know, get working capital, pay for salaries, get inventory and all this type of stuff. Just been really, really proud of that. So I think 2019, we launched the Yoko Go. So that was that little card machine, the mm-hmm. tiny line.
Mm-hmm, yes.
In our view, that machine redefined the market. We launched mm-hmm. it at 799 Rand. And bear in mind, you know, a machine prior to that was like thousands of rands, right?
Yes.
So we completely brought the cost down. We created the access. And in our view, really changed the market. And then I guess the next year was COVID. Which was crazy. So, through the restrictions and the situation, we saw a 90% drop off in our trading volume. And I always try and explain that 90% drop off was actually a reflection of what was going on with small business across the country, which was really, you know, scary when you think about it. We could see in real time how they were doing. And because of this real-time data that we had, and we were using this information to understand how we wanted to respond as a company, we took quite an interesting decision to make this information available to the public. So we launched the Small Business Recovery Monitor.
Right.
It was a dashboard that we made available on our website. And you could see day-to-day across the provinces, across, you know, restaurants, health and beauty, and retailers, what the COVID restrictions were doing towards trade and how the businesses were recovering. And it was really nice. I think we were quoted or used, you know, or referenced 400 times in the media
sure.
to that information. And we felt really proud to, you know, be able to contribute to a very difficult situation in terms of creating information transparency. So, yeah, we recovered quite nicely from then. It was a nice V-shaped recovery.
Yeah.
We've been able to attract capital and continue building the product. And yeah, just very happy with where we are right now. And thank you so much for joining us at Yoko Next, where we could announce some of our new products a month ago.
Absolutely. It was, thank you for having me. It was, as I say, enlightening. One of the things, and I know your history would be more on a corporate side, so was mine. And one of the things that I've really loved about radio, which I imagine you've experienced in your founder journey, is the power of stepping out of the ivory tower. And so for me, it's conversations every single day and understanding the pain points of users or listeners or voters or South Africans. And yours is obviously very clearly for the merchants as well as the customers that they face. And I found that Yoko Next really gave me a far better sense than if I'd gone to a PowerPoint presentation in an office about what everything is up to. And one of the most exciting things was obviously having some of your merchants coming to explain to us how much it's affected their business, how excited they are being able to access Yoko Capital during a meeting, you know, at Yoko Next, and being like, actually, I'm going to need to expand my health and beauty business to 7 stores, and so I'm going to lock in that capital, and also how it's empowered waiters and other staff in restaurants and food businesses. The thing that's very interesting to me as you're telling me about the evolution of the story is how timing is never easy to obviously establish, but when it's almost as if Yoko Capital, Yoko Go, and the like preceded the pandemic pretty well. You know, you were almost positioned to be able to create this dashboard to be able to actually understand what was happening with small business recovery. And you've recently spoken to Parliament told Parliament about the need for some revision of legislation that kind of focuses on these pain points, focuses on the needs of small business owners. Won't you take us a little bit through how you also have intervened in a pretty tight regulatory environment?
That's a great question. It's Transformational things happen in any market when companies are able to use innovation to meet an unmet need in the market, right? So, you know, there were always card machines in South Africa that were provided by the institutions, but, you know, they were expensive. The model was very, you know, quite restrictive to small business, where you needed to have quite a lot of commitments. And the distribution required somebody to come see you, which became quite prohibitive outside of the urban center. So we solve for these things, and we created a marketplace. So the way I see it is we moved people away from cash into digital.
Yes.
And in the context of transactions, this is incredibly important, right? So when you think about an economy, what is an economy? An economy is just the sum of all the transactions that happen inside of it. And if a lot of these transactions are happening in cash, you can't really see what's going on, right?
Correct.
You're a bit blind. Some things are flying in the dark, or even a little bit in the gray. And the moment you digitize cash, you start creating transparency. These business owners become real, right? Mm. They have a footprint and a history. And through that, they're able to get access to capital and all these things that are part of the formalization journey. So transactions are really, really important when you think about them at this level. We call them the blood of the economy.
Yeah, they are.
And because of that, and the fact that we focused on the unattended or the businesses that were left behind, it has put us in an important position of influence.
Yes.
Where we can advocate for these segments with evidence and with confidence and with credibility. And it's just put us in a nice position where we do have, you know, the ear of policymakers and regulators, because they can actually see that, you know, I'm now able to make a payment at a place where I could not do that before, right?
Yes.
People are actually experiencing that themselves. It's not something that's just sitting inside the ether. So this is very important for us. You know, the purpose of our company is enabling people to thrive. Our vision is opening commerce. And it's all about participation, bringing people in. We really believe this is really going to activate the economy. And it's very important that, you know, policy and regulation supports this.
Mm.
And we're just seeing really positive signals over the last while that things are really going to open up. And this is just going to be great for everyone.
One of the other things, and I completely agree with you, by the way, I would also advocate for the, well, what Yoko seems to do is collate the data that we use to formulate intelligence. And then we can make really great decisions, whether they be policy, business, or otherwise. One of the other observations that you've made, we both contributed to Bruce Whitfield's The One Thing, where he's
yes.
brought together various persons' perspectives on if you had one 30-minute stint in the union buildings as president, what would you change? And your key message was around the stressing the importance of open markets, whether that be capital markets, people, goods. And I'm curious, you know, how do we open more borders? And particularly when I'm thinking about the Africa Free Trade Agreement, I'm thinking about opportunities, maybe even for Yoko to find its way across the continent. I'm a little bit behind on whether or not you are, although I do know you serve over 200,000 businesses in this particular country. But when we're thinking about open markets, I know that tends to often mean for investment to come in, but also for us to be able to play outward.
Indeed, Rasita. So maybe just a little bit of context about what I wrote. And I've spoken to Bruce about this before, and I feel very passionately about it, that we cannot underestimate as a country, what, you know, decades of sanctions did in terms of how we ran the economy, being a closed economy, you know, having to be an organized economy, right? It's a real thing. And it takes a while to unlearn some of these dynamics. They just don't disappear overnight, even though, you know, it's post-94 and the like. And really, there has to be this transition from being closed to open, right? And across the whole economy, because that's how the market is able to really operate and, able to function at full force. So this is very important. I keep beating the drum about it. And, as an organization, we really advocate for this. This is not just about us. It's about the whole economy. It's about people inside of our sector. There's just this belief that, instead of trying to figure out how we can divide up the pie, how do we create more pies,
Yes.
and more marketplaces, and really grow the economy from a fundamental perspective versus just kind of moving numbers on a spreadsheet, right? So, we really advocate for this, and then I really believe that as South Africa opens up more, especially to the rest of the continent. So, we're a very technical business. We need highly skilled labor to do what we do, across hardware, software, payment processing, regulation, all these things. And sometimes we can't find the talent we need at home. That's just the reality, right? We want to be able to serve our customers in a high quality, safe, and with the best technology, and we need to be in a position to go find the best skills to do that, right? So that our customers can benefit. And just hiring from the rest of the continent is very difficult. It's a process. It's something that we should be really encouraging the free flow of labor to the best ideas. It just really helps to propagate things. You see that in Europe, right? It's open borders. Talent is able to move freely across the markets. And it really becomes quite empowering for the companies, and the markets get what they need. And I feel very strongly that South Africa needs to be in a similar position. And as we do that, the other markets are going to open up too, and that's really going to create a lot of prosperity. So I think just to sum up, when something is closed and organized and controlled, the few benefit and things don't grow, and things are asymmetric, and that's why we have a bit of a Gini coefficient issue in the country. When things are open and the market is allowed to work its way through, and the best skills are able to move to the best ideas, then you create prosperity and you create growth, and everyone benefits. And this is something we certainly advocate for at JOCO.
I was going to close by asking you what you're most excited about for South Africa, but openness seems to be it.
Yes, well, maybe just to close off, I haven't been this excited about the country in a long time. I describe it as a mini renaissance that we're going through right now. Just there's a lot of things just starting to move in the right direction. Whether it's the rugby or the GNU or Eskom, people starting to come back home. It's just things starting to open up. And yeah, I'm just very proud of the country. I'm proud of our people, and we're very proud to be able to participate in this, and really look forward to the next decade and beyond.
Couldn't agree more. Katlego Mapai, Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of JOCO, thank you so much for joining us on this evening's Pivot Point.
Thank you, Rishile.
See
Thank
you
you.
Soon. Ciao.
Bye.
It's 7:32.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.